Howdy, folks. Today, we're going to be talking about having a work and life balance. You see, money is a necessity for living in this world. Financial security is something that people often pursue. And the challenge is, a lot of times, as we're seeking to take care of our families, take care of ourselves, take care of others whom we have the opportunity to help, to support the work of the Lord, well, we need money for those types of things. And work is the way that we obtain those funds. Well, on the other end, sometimes you can work so hard and so often that you have a difficulty with time for leisure, time to enjoy the fruit of your labor. That balance for a lot of people is hard to find. And you know, balance, that's one of those words that I love to talk about, because with most subject matters, like we're going to talk about today, finding balance is very difficult for a lot of people. I know this subject matter hits me, so I need to remind myself on a regular basis that there is more to do, and even then, and the Lord's work. You know, there's more to do than just working all the time. I sometimes have to stop myself and I have to say, wait a minute, you know, spend some time with the family, find some time to rest your mind, and so forth and so on. And that's been an issue for me for a very long time. Prior to full-time work in teaching and preaching the gospel, you know, back in 1998, for example, I was working 6:30 in the morning till 8:30 at night, Monday through Friday. Sometimes I was working on Saturdays, same hours, and sometimes did some side work as well to be able to obtain more funds. Then I got off of work and I'd come home and I'd get on the internet, you know, back during the You've Got Mail days, AOL, dial-up, and I'd start corresponding with people about the gospel. I was on a list of email list. I don't know if those of you who were around then might remember these Yahoo groups that used to exist back in the day. And there were people on there that were in religious discussions. And I would go from working my 14-hour shift to doing that for a time period, much to the annoyance of my lovely wife. Well, that's the type of person I am, so I need to be reminded there are other things in life besides being busy with necessities. You see, I don't know about for you, but for me, I'm a person of practicality. I have a hard time sitting in the recliner. In fact, for those of you that know me very well, I like to watch football on Sundays, but I don't just watch football. I start working on, you know, the next week's lessons while I'm watching football, because I just have a very hard time just relaxing. And it's not that I always need to do that. I just find relaxing to be a waste of time sometimes. So listen, lessons like this, very good for me to teach, very good for me to remind myself of. I hope it will be helpful for you. Now, aside from the work of an evangelist, just work. Providing for your family is really going to be the focal point here. And when it comes to my work, it's a little different subject for me because, you know, I don't just do the work of an evangelist to provide for my family. So it's a little bit of a different subject. So let's focus, you know, more on work in general for the time being. Working is a necessity in life. And Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 15 says, "Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." We don't want to be people who are lazy. Why? Because that will result in you don't have anything to eat. You don't want to be a sluggard, right? The church in Thessalonica, in the first letter, here's what the saints were told in 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12. "That you study to be quiet, to do your own business, to work with your own hands, as we commanded you, that ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, that ye may have lack of nothing. And then in the second letter, after they're being told, hey, mind your business, be busy working, in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, even when we were with you, so in addition to the writing of the first letter, time where Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy were with the saints in Thessalonica, even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. Think on that. Think on that, right? Here are these clear scriptural instructions that you need to provide for yourself. You need to provide. You need to work to do so. If not, then you've got no right to food. You know, being a beggar by choice is an unscriptural, sinful decision. So on this end, you've got the Lord telling you this. In fact, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, when Paul's writing Timothy about widows indeed, verses that need to be helped, and first by their families and so forth and so on, if not, if they meet all the qualifications, they can be helped by the church. Well, in the part of 1 Timothy 5 where it's talking about the family, verse 8, and in this particular point, if you back up to verse 4, it's talking about even nephews. So this isn't just, you know, a child to the parent who might be older in time of need or vice versa, or your own wife and children. This is even broader than that, okay? It's talking about, hey, if my aunt is a widow indeed, if my aunt's a widow, let me just say that, I don't need to let her go without helping her. Well, to be able to do that, 1 Timothy 5 verse 8, if any provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he had denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. The Lord's telling me I'm worse than an unbeliever. And that's to illustrate the point, because we know there's not one sin greater than another, James 2:10 among other verses. But it's to illustrate like how man would look at things is how Paul is addressing this to Timothy. The man who does not provide for his aunt as well as his, you know, more direct family is worse than an unbeliever. So we're pressed with, I've got to be a provider. I've got to have the means to do that. And beyond the means, again, even when you go beyond, I need to provide this, just the fact that we are created with an inability to be lazy people. You've got to learn that and desire that. Ecclesiastes 5:12 says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. When you've put in a day's work, you sleep better. Because physically, when you're just sitting around doing nothing, what benefit is there to sleep? Think about the principles involved in that. And there's more that we could say from these verses. But that is why we want to work. Why faithful Christians have that desire. Now, before we get a little bit deeper into this, I want to make something clear. I'm not trying in this lesson, and I would hope if you know me that you would never think that this is the case. I'm not trying in this lesson to get people to turn themselves over to being carnally minded, to think in a carnal pleasure type of way. Romans 13, 12 through 14 says, the night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. That's clear. I'm not telling you to do contrary to that. Galatians 5:24 says, they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lust. I'm not trying to get you to think in a carnally lustful kind of way. In 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17, it says, love not the world, neither the things in the world. If any man love the world, love the Father is not in him. For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So it's not about turn to the world or desire the things of the world. I'm not telling you start building a bigger house or start buying the faster car. I'm not trying to get you to think along that materialistic mindset. Nor am I suggesting spend less time doing spiritual things. Maybe for some of you, you need to be spending more time doing spiritual things. 1 Corinthians 15:58, therefore, after teaching about the resurrection and the applications therein in this context, therefore, my beloved brethren, be you steadfast, unmovable, always abound in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know your labor is not in vain in the Lord. What do you think the reward's going to be on? Matthew 16:27, Jesus says, the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels and shall reward every man according to his works. If you're a part-time Christian, what makes you think you're going to get the full-time reward? Yeah, there's no such thing as a part-time Christian in the Bible, right? Your life belongs to the Lord. You're his servant. Now, part of that is that the Lord allows us to enjoy life, and I'm going to prove that to you in this lesson, okay? But not so much that we turn into carnally minded people and start surrendering ourselves to the desires of the flesh. So I want to open up the heart of our lesson in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 9 through 13. What profit hath he that worketh and that wherein he laboreth? I've seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. Now, when you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it is really sad. And I think there's a great caution here that we learn when we study these things. Because Solomon has been gifted by God. When you go read 1 Kings chapters 1, 2, and 3, keep going from there. Solomon was given wisdom from God in that prior to Jesus being on earth, he was the wisest man on earth. He had a spiritual gift of wisdom. But when you're reading the book of Ecclesiastes, one of the sad realities that comes with a great amount of wisdom, Ecclesiastes 1:18 says, and much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increases sorrow. And you begin to think about the carnality in the world and how empty it is. You work, you eat, and you got to repeat, right? Because you're going to be hungry tomorrow. And the next day, and the next day, you build something. And whatever it is in this world, no matter how well it is drawn up, no matter what architect is behind the plan, no matter how quality and the products are that are in this world, no matter how good the workers are, no matter what engineering type of skill goes into it, whatever you build, whatever you make, whatever you design is going to decay. It's going to need maintenance, it's going to need repairs, or it's going to fall apart. When you sit back and you think on that long enough, like the book of Ecclesiastes does, man, you start to think everything is vain. Well, it's not. I like to think of this life as our temporary home. And when I think about it in that regard, it allows me to put everything in the context of enjoy it today. Sometimes here in classes, matter of fact, I just did this last Sunday talking to the brethren here as we're in Luke 16 and we're talking about Lazarus and the rich man right now, verses 19 through 31. And I made the point that, you know, a lot of people live in the past and think way too much about the future. And again, with everything, there has to be balance here, right? I have to pay my bills. So I can't just say, I've got this amount of money in the bank right now, let me go spend it all and enjoy today. But with balance, I need to understand something, and we're going to get to it in this lesson, that tomorrow might not come. Things could change for the better, or for the worse. And there are people that tend to exist on, you know, two ends of the spectrum. There are your spend it all people. You know what I'm talking about. They have a payday, whether it's weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And not soon after that payday, they are absolutely broke and barely getting by until the next payday. And all of it is not just because things are so expensive. And I know that that can be part of it. Don't get me wrong. I know what it's like to have to pinch pennies. Been there and done that many, many times, and am just above doing that right now. But they spend. Then on the other end are the people that have and choose to live like they have not. They're preparing for that always coming rainy day. Hey, and out here in El Paso, it's been raining this week. Boy, talk about something. Not normal for us in October. We didn't get much rain in our monsoon season, but now we're getting some rain. I don't particularly like how chilly it's become, but you know, the rain is welcome. We need it. But there are people that think, hey, the storm is always on the horizon and they're always saving up for something bad to happen. And it's a goalpost that keeps moving, right? Let's say I need a X amount of $1,000 emergency fund. Okay, I've obtained that. Wait, maybe I should prepare a little bit more. Maybe I should have this much emergency fund. Wait, maybe I should have this much. You move that goalpost. And what are you doing in the meantime? I have nothing against peanut butter and jelly. I eat peanut butter and jelly. Please understand, it's just for illustration's sake. If you're eating peanut butter and jelly all the time, when you could afford to enjoy steak or whatever it is that is a little bit more expensive, and you're choosing to do that because you're constantly moving the goalpost, this lesson is for you. You're missing on the enjoyment side of life. And, you know, you don't want to be at either extreme, right? Remember what we read in Ecclesiastes 3:13, every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. If you're always laboring to store up, what are you doing? What point is there in you working for your wages and then constantly putting off enjoying the fruit of that labor? Ecclesiastes 2:24, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and that he should enjoy, that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, and it was from the hand of God. We've got to realize that. Listen, I'm talking to me, and I'm talking to you. What good is it if we're not enjoying anything? What do you think you're going to do? I made this point when we were talking about Luke 16:19 through 31 to the brethren down here in El Paso last Sunday in our class we were having, where a lot of people save up, and this is something I've seen happen to some of my brethren as they reach older ages, and they saved up a pretty good nest egg, and they get up in age, and they get to a point where they need to be in a care facility because their needs are beyond what people can provide for them in their homes, and that's the choice that they make. And then that care facility takes everything they had in that nest egg. It's gone. What are you doing? What are you saving up to pay a nursing home down the road? What are you missing along the journey? You're not going to take your money with you. And Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 15 through 19 says, as he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return. To go as he came, shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. This also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. What profit hath he that labored for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, hath much sorrow and wrath in his sickness. Behold, that is which I have seen. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also whom God given them riches and wealth, have given him power, that is authority, to eat thereof, to take his portion and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. You hadn't had steak in how many years, but you got hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. Why? And I'm just making up numbers. Just out of thin air. Don't read too much into the illustration. But why? You got to have a work-life balance. I made the point that tomorrow is not promised because the scriptures tell us that. And you know, just let me stop for a minute. Do you really need the scriptures to tell you this? I mean, what we just read in Ecclesiastes 5, 15, and 19, you've likely been in the presence of people that have died. You saw that their spirit didn't hop out their body and start collecting the things they wanted to take with them, right? You saw that after they departed this world, the family probably fought over their possessions, or somewhere along the line, they were divided up in some way, or the nursing home took the house and everything else, right? Did you need somebody to tell you that from the Bible? Do you need somebody to tell you that tomorrow is not promised? Not only might the Lord come, because he's going to come as a thief in the night, 2 Peter 3 and verse 10, and the world's going to be destroyed and the works therein. But none of us, no matter how hard we fight, can extend our life beyond what time and chance is going to bring about. Do you think about time and chance? The Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but that time and chance happeneth to them all. Don't you already know that? Like, do you need Ecclesiastes 9:11 to tell you that the next time you're in your automobile, something can happen where you get in a crash, and that crash could take your life? Do you need somebody to tell you that? Do you need somebody to tell you that something could happen within your body that you can't see and you don't even know happened, and that your breath that you took a second ago might be your last one? You don't need the scriptures for that, do you? You know that, but I'm going to give you them anyway. Proverbs 27:1 says, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. James 4:13-16 says, go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there in a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we'll live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. You see, the Lord may end the world at any point in time. He controls that. You don't. And other things may occur. For us to act as though we control tomorrow is a vain boasting, and it's evil. Think about when in Luke chapter 12, 13 through 21, there was one there that came to Jesus and said, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. Jesus' response is just great. You know, it shows us if we're spiritually minded like we ought to be, like our Lord, we're not caught up in the things of this world. Luke 12:14, he said unto him, man, who made me a judge or divider over you? Then verse 15, he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness. For man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. There will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You don't know what's coming tomorrow. I've known a number of people who are constantly building up more financial wealth. They keep moving the goalpost. They keep thinking tomorrow's coming. And they're planning on enjoying some of their reserves, just not today. Think of people who are waiting for the outcome of the election this year. And now that, unless something crazy happens, looks like Donald J. Trump will be the president of the United States. They're still counting a few votes at the time that I'm recording this podcast. But he has, unless something just insane and unforeseeable, we should be able to say he's going to be the next president. Well, there are some people that were waiting for that. And they're planning on what they're going to do, whether they're going to buy a new house, whether they're going to buy an electric vehicle or a gas vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's not God. He can't control anything that is going to happen in this world naturally. Furthermore, him being just a man, who's to say he can even carry out the promises that he's made? I hope that he does. I'm rooting for some of the things that he's promised going to change, but I'm not counting on it. He's but a man. What if he dies before the election? What if something crazy wild happens? They put him in prison. What if J.D. Vance decides to take a different direction, or there's some law in the books that doesn't even allow him to become president? What ifs, right? Why do you think the Bible tells us it's better to put trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man? Better to trust in the Lord than confidence in princes in Psalm 118, 8 and 9. I don't know if this is true. I'm not going to count to figure it out. But I once read that those are the middle verses of the Bible. If that's true, that is fascinating, right? Better to trust in the Lord than put confidence in man. Better to trust in the Lord than put confidence in princes. I believe God. I don't believe man. Don't count on the future. Looking forward to the day when you can enjoy life. Enjoy life. Learn from Jesus. In Mark chapter 6, verses 30 and 32, the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said to them, "Come yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately." Think like that. Was Jesus a lazy person? No. You remember when he went with his parents to Jerusalem at the Feast of the Passover and was 12 years old, Luke 2, 42, 41 and 42. And when they left, how that he wasn't with them, that after 3 days, he was in the temple in the midst of the doctors hearing them and asking them questions. And that people were astonished at his understanding and his answers. And then when they saw Jesus, his mother said, "Son," and this is Luke 2:48, "Why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing." Listen to Jesus' answer at 12 years old. He said to them, "How is it that ye sought me? Wish ye not that I be about my father's business?" At 12 years old. Later, as an adult out with the disciples following him, he has a discussion with a woman at the well, and a Samaritan woman at the well. And after that, John 4, 31 and 34, his disciples prayed him, and that is, they entreated him. They requested him, saying, "Master, eat." But he said to them, "I have meat to eat that you know not of." Therefore said he, the disciples one to another, "Hath any man brought him out to eat?" Because, they missed the point. And in verse 34, Jesus said to them, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work." As he's talking to a blind man, or talking about a blind man in a context where he heals a blind man, after he answers a question asked by the disciples, in John 9 and verse 4, he tells the disciples, "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work." Jesus was about his father's business. We have the record from 12 years old to the time that he died. This was his mindset. Yet, he wants his disciples to take time for leisure. He had a social life, so much that they laid a charge against him for it. In Matthew 11, 18 and 19, John came neither eating nor drinking, and you say he hath a devil. Son of man came eating and drinking, you say, behold, a gluttonous and winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners, but wisdom is justified of her children. He had a social life. He wasn't all about work, but he was. Because being all about the work of the Lord includes having a full, well-rounded life. Do you catch that? A full, well-rounded life. If you put yourself in a balanced mindset according to the scriptures, you're going to be godly. And being godly is beneficial now as well as to come in eternity. In 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8, bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable in all things, having the promise of life that now is and of that which is to come. You do not have to decide between being godly and in a holy way enjoying things of this life. In 1 Peter 3:10 and 11, says, he that will love life, you hear that? Not hate it, love it, and see good days. You see, I want you to pay attention. Being godly doesn't mean having bad days. He that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, his lips that they speak no guile, let him eschew evil, do good, let him seek peace and ensue it. That's the right balance. You can love life. You can see good days. And this, in 1 Peter 3:10 and 11, is after Peter's already written them about persecution in chapters 1 and 2 and is currently in chapter 3 in the midst of getting ready to get back into being persecuted. Even in persecution, times of persecution for being faithful children of God, seeing good days. Godliness allows you to balance that right, allows you to enjoy the fruit of your labor without desiring to have more and more and more. In 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 10, the evangelist Timothy is told, godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing in this world. It is certain that we carry nothing out. Remember, we talked about that, didn't we? Ecclesiastes 5, 15 through 19. Here we see it again. So in verse 8 of 1 Timothy 6, having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Very clear and simple. Godliness allows you to have the right balance. I want to wrap up a little bit shorter podcast today. I want to wrap up with a passage out of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. This chapter is talking about marriage as to allow saints to fulfill physical desires without committing fornication. The verse I'm going to read about prefaces how that the married man and woman cares for the things of the world, how they might please their spouses, versus the contrast of how the unmarried and the widow can focus on things of the Lord. The preface of this is 1 Corinthians 7:31. They that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you balance work and enjoying the physical things in life. You don't let it rule you. You don't make it your life. You retain a spiritual approach. You use this world in a way to enjoy this world without abusing this world. I hope this lesson has been thought-provoking and profitable unto you. Hey, so if you listen on a regular basis, starting with this podcast, I'm going to be recording in a different room in my house now. I have a different area of the house set up for podcasting. I'm not sure what the sound quality is going to be and how it's going to be from time to time. I know as I'm in here, I can hear more noise in my house than I was in the garage. So if you can let me know how the sound quality is over the next 5 or 6 podcasts, and if you can hear things, if it annoys you or not. As you all know, my daughter Taylor will sometimes make some very loud noises, and it's a little bit hard to not hear. I've taken some precautions to try to add some sound barriers, but I got to tell you, this being the first podcast I've done in this setup, I like it a whole lot better than standing in the garage and recording, so hopefully it's going to work out for you and for me. But let me know what it sounds like if you wouldn't mind. So I'm thankful for you listening. If you got questions, comments, or you just want to chat, go to wordsoftruth.net, my personal website. You can call me or email me. All my contact information is there. I will go ahead and wrap up here. If all goes according to plan, be back on Tuesday. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.